dwell very much on the background to this project, but merely say that it has a bearing on the transformation from largely spherical objects, AGB objects, to post-AGB objects with very complex geometries. And I think it's relatively well accepted now that for many of these objects, a binary companion plays an important role. And I will show you a very special object in this circumstance. So the object is HD101584. You see the SED here, which shows that there is an early type star and there is a huge far infrared excess. And indeed, the conclusions from the optical data is that it's a 7-magnitude star, so it's a very bright star. It's an A6 star, most likely a post-AGB object with a mass of 0.6 solar masses. And it is a binary with a period of about 200 days. And the system has most likely gone through a post-common envelope evolution where the companions spiral in towards the primary but then stopped and survived, which is important, of course, in the context that will come. So the optical appearance is not particularly spectacular. These are the HST data in two filters. There's some diffuse scattered light, as you can see. But the radio appearance is much more promising. This is carbon monoxide, single dish data, and you see the 12CO line here. It's a broad line, 300 kilometers per second, with a complicated line profile. And you see how the line profile changes with the isotopologs of carbon monoxide. So this all led to the idea that this would be an interesting object to observe with ALMA, and we got observing time in cycle 1 and cycle 3, and we have two settings to cover the different CO isotopologs, but with the sensitivity of ALMA, it turns out that a lot of other lines showed up as well. And in general, there are lots of sulfur lines for unknown reasons. So the beam for the cycle 1 data, and this is mostly the data I will talk about, is 0.5 arc second. But we also have cycle 3, 0.05 arc second data. And yesterday I got information that these data are obtained, but I cannot show them here, unfortunately, which I had expected to do. But okay, this is just to show you the quality of the data. This is the main isotopologue of 12CO. And importantly, when we compare this with single dish data, it turns out that we miss very little flux. So we don't really have to worry about that. Here you see the other CO isotopologues and, for instance, a line from sulfur monoxide. So it's very high quality data. Some of these results are already published, and I will go through that very quickly. We can easily identify three kinematical components. There is a narrow bipolar high-velocity outflow at very high velocities. There's an hourglass structure which is surrounding this high-velocity outflow, and there is a central region where the velocity range is much more restricted. And we think we see the system almost pole-on. This is just to show you, this is the 12CO data spanning the full velocity range. Here you see the bipolar outflow, here you see the hourglass structure, and here you see the central part. And I'll illuminate that a little bit better here. So on the upper one here, you see the narrow high velocity outflow in position velocity diagram, and it's in particular seen in silicon monoxide, which is a shock tracer. Here are the data on which we use to derive the hourglass structure, and this is 13CO data, and this illustrates the central region, which you see here in H2S, and I'll come back to this a little bit later. So this is the geometry that we think we see, the high-velocity outflow, the hourglass structure, and then we have the central part here, which I will come back to later here. We think it's an expanding ring and a circumbinary disk. Looking at the continuum, which you see here, this is the 1.3 millimeter continuum, and compared to the data in dust scattered light, it's really difficult to interpret this. The only important is really that most of the emission is coming from the central region here. And then there is some diffuse emission around here. An interesting thing is that it appears that we're recovering only 25% of the continuum emission, which is really strange considering that we don't lose any line emission. And this is really not clear to us, so this is something that we're investigating, and I will not dwell on that anymore. We did a number of simple-minded estimates, and I will go through them fairly quickly now. First of all, we do mass estimates, and one of the major conclusions is that about a solar mass of circumstellar material lies in the very central region. We looked at the time scale, and we find that the kinematic age of the jet or the high-velocity outflow is less than 500 years. So it's a very recent event. We looked at the momentum rate, and we estimate that the momentum rate of the gas is much higher, more than two orders of magnitude higher than the radiation momentum rate. So the whole thing, this cannot be radiation driven. And we looked at the energy, and we estimate the amount of kinematic energy in the accelerated gas. And because we have a system where the companion actually survived, we can now also calculate the amount of released potential energy. And we do this by estimating that the mass of the companion is 0.6 solar masses and the present distance is 0.7 AU. And then we get this as a result. So taken at face values at least, the released potential energy when the companion spiral in is not enough to drive the outflow. On this issue, we have some new data which relates to the mass of the primary, and we know that the 17O-18O ratio is strongly changing during the red giant branch evolution, and it depends essentially only on the main sequence mass. And so as long as the star does not go through hot bottom burning during the AGB, this will not change on the AGB. And with the results that we got from these APEX data with this ratio, we can conclude that the main sequence mass of the primary is about 1.2 solar masses, which is in the ballpark of what we thought before. Now coming to some interesting question marks that remain in these data and that we haven't really published yet and I thought would be interesting to look at. And the first one is the complex morphology that you see at the edges of the hourglass structure. So these are the rings, you know, that we interpret in the form of an hourglass structure. But you see here, as we deviate even more in velocity, some sort of strange complex morphology comes up, maybe with a spiral and so on. And it's almost, you know, symmetric with respect to the center, so you see the same thing here. Maybe this is an effect of the capture event. We will have a look at this later on. Also, if we go down to low surface brightnesses and look at the data, and once again, these are the rings from which we infer the hourglass structure, but you see there's something here as well. And on the other side, there's something here. And actually, the velocity gradient of this is opposite to that of the high velocity outflow. So we have something at a position angle of 60 minus 60 degrees and with an opposite velocity gradient of the high velocity outflow. So is there another bipolar outflow in the system? And incidentally, we once again looked at the OH masers in this object, and we redid observations that were done 25 years ago, and we found, really, for being maser emissions, some peculiar properties. We find that this is the line that we detect. The 1667 megahertz line is very strong, and there's absolutely no time variability in 25 years. There is absolutely no polarization, and we do not see any of the other lines, but very high signal-to-noise ratio. And this is really, you know, strange for a maser. We find that the location of the masers is outside, just outside the central region. And it has a position angle of minus 60 degrees and an opposite velocity gradient. So once again, what is this? Is this another bipolar outflow? And now we go to the central region, which we think is an expanding ring and a circumbinary disk. And we look first at the H2S, which is produces for some reason a very strong line in this source. And this is the emission, the brightness distribution. And if you take an intensity cut along here, you see that the brightness distribution and then most likely the density distribution is sharply truncated at the edges. And it's very limited in velocity space, about 16 kilometers per second. If you look at this in a little bit more detail, so this is the H2S data, this is the sulfur monoxide data, we think that indeed we see a ring and a central condensation. And if we look at the ring, we find that the velocity gradient in the ring is opposite to that of the outflow. And the only reasonable explanation to that is that you have an equatorial ring, which is expanding. That would fit, but it would give a very high, maybe even uncomfortably high, expansion velocity of this ring. And so this is uncertain to us. If we go to the central region, this is once again the H2S data at 0.5 arc second resolution. This is the H2S data at 0.05 arc second resolution. We're down to 35 astronomical units. Now we lose a lot of flux here, so we are a bit careful, but you clearly see that there is a condensation here at the center, which is unresolved. We may even see the ring here in these data. And if we look at the sulfur dioxide line coming from high energies, it's a very narrow line coming from this region, only about 2 kilometers per second wide line. And we speculate that what we see here is really the circumbinary disk surrounding the former AGB star, where all the H envelope was stripped off the star, and the companion, which is now responsible for the jet, since about 500 years ago. And then finally, we also have the continuum data. So this is once again the 0.5 arc second resolution data. This is the 0.05 arc second resolution data. And there is an unresolved emission from the central region here. And then we see these arcs, and it's difficult to understand what this is, really. So this is also something that we have to work on. So these are the conclusions then. This is an object, it's a binary object where most likely the companion spiraled in and it survived. So we can estimate the amount of released potential energy. And the circumstellar medium has really been severely disrupted by this event. We estimate that it happened about 500 years ago. And taken at least at face value, the kinetic energy or the potential energy released from the falling in of the companion is not enough. And we do find a lot of material is still remaining in the central region, most likely in a circumbinary disk. But there is also much structure that remains to be explained, which do not fit into this perhaps simple-minded picture. And so I thank you for this. So this is just a number of global maps where you can see how different species trace different parts of this source. Thank you.